Jerry, would you mind going back to the era when the American Council of Judaism was prominent still in relation to the matter of Israel and fund collection, as they might have been centered in various places around town, okay. And the rabbi's relationship to that.
Reminds me of a couple of stories. Okay.
Well, when I, by the time I got here, the attitude of Rhoda Sholem, both the leadership of Rhoda Sholem and the rabbis, were probably had grown to neutral, but neutral to being negative. Because being neutral was being negative, in a sense. When Israel was being formed and Israel was dying, being neutral was the worst thing that could happen. That's what happened, that's what we're all doing with Bosnia. We're being, you know, neutral. So what had happened was that the leadership of the Federation was not coming from Rhoda Sholem at that time. It was coming more from B'nai Israel. Is that the one up on Shea? And then what's the other one up on
Beth Sholem?
Of Beth Sholem, and then the other one,
Tree of Life.
Actually, a lot of them from the Tree of Life. And Beth Sholem. And some of the strong Zionists from the Orthodox congregations.
You could name them.
Well, you know, like Herman Feinberg, yeah. That caliber person.
Herman Feinberg was Tree of Life.
Right. And the Robinson family.
Also Tree of Life.
Right, Tree of Life. But then there were some, and Beth Sholem. I'm trying to remember who there was at Beth Sholem. Jerry Ostro, I don't know where he's from. I think he's Rhoda Sholem. But he was a little later. By the time I got here, incidentally, I remember I said that I followed somebody named Bob Hiller. When I went to Cleveland, Bob Hiller came to Pittsburgh. And when he left Pittsburgh to go to Baltimore, I followed him here to Pittsburgh. And we see each other to this day. He's now retired, and we see each other in Florida quite a bit. In any event, and he had the job when he got here. The Federation was practically nothing. And he was the one that called together 10 or 15 of the people I'm talking about. I talked about, say, look, if you guys want to have something, this is what you have to do. Now, so there we are dealing with a situation where these people are neutral, and we're trying to raise money from people who have money, but who over the years weren't prodded like an Alva Hill or Silverwood prod people to do something for Israel or to be involved. And then we did have a few people who were active at Rhoda Sholem, Jesse Cohen, Lenny Rudolph, some of the Alvin Road down, some of them, who were very upset, but just didn't know what to do about it, because after all, Freehoff had an image in this town. He's a tremendous scholar.
Mm-hmm.
Is he still dead? It's been recently.
No.
Is his wife living?
4 or 5 years. Lillian might have died recently.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, she died.
You know, a tremendous mental giant.
Mm-hmm.
Well respected in his field, except for this particular problem. What happened was that the younger rabbis that began to come in during this period began to take on some of this flavor. Mm-hmm. Now, as we got strong, the Federation got stronger, and as we got more and more people from Road of Sholem, younger people who felt that Road of Sholem had done the wrong thing. And you have to understand, the younger people were in there, let's say, by this time were in their 40s. The people that had been affected by the temple were elderly by this time. And we kind of just wrote them off in terms of getting them to be contributors. Just couldn't deal with them. They were just away from us, with a few exceptions. And then so every once in a while, one of these rabbis, not Freon so much, but the assistant rabbis, would make some comment at a sermon about, oh, why doesn't Israel welcome more Reform rabbis? And why are they so orthodox? And maybe we ought to withhold our allocation. Whenever you can imagine how incensed this made our leadership. And I being, I don't know, young and cocky, said, we can't take this. We have to have a meeting with the president of Road of Sholem. Really developed into a pretty good giver. And when we met with the president, and I had the president of the Federation, also a Road of Sholem person, saying, you know, how can in front of 1,000 people all these comments be made? You know, they're very judicious, but it was very clear. And this guy says, what can you do? And I said, fire a rabbi? It was like an unheard of thing. And I said, what do you mean you're just a professional person? You know, social workers get fired, even though I must say that over the years, it took a while before they began to fire social workers, because we were also looked upon as
sacrilegious.
You know, you don't do that to a Jewish schlepper. But that changed, because as soon as they began to pay us some money, they wanted some performance. And then they didn't hesitate to fire people. And I'll never forget, this guy couldn't believe what I said.
You said it?
Huh?
You said it?
Oh, I said that to you. What do you mean you can't fire him? He's just a professional. You should be fired for what he's done. Well, they didn't fire him. Well, I'll say this, that now this person, whom I shall not name, I go very pro-Israel. But I suspect he was taking a cue from the way the temple was those days.
Yes, but I'd like to hear if you can say anything about Dr. Freiherr personally.
He was not, by that time.
Even before that, a little bit of the evolution.
That time, that is history to me, because by the time I got here, he was no longer openly saying anything. He was strictly neutral. His moves were beginning to, you know, to permit bar mitzvahs and bar mitzvahs, you know, and they were taking more Jewish Jewishness to the temple. But he was no longer negative.
And what year did you come to Pittsburgh?
60. Oh, just going over that with illness. About 65. Yeah, 65. By that time, all the damage had been done. He was no longer vocal, strictly passive. And that infuriated us just as much. And I don't even remember him ever making a sermon, even in his later life, you know, for Israel. And yeah, I hate to say this, but it was such a big part of Pittsburgh's life. But he ended up being a good friend, you know, in his later years. But that was a big part of what went on in the early years of Pittsburgh, as we were trying to develop and grow, bringing young people and so forth. And we overcame it. Today, the leadership of Rhoda Shulman is a leadership of Federation. That's all, because all of these other people are gone, and their children are not part of it. We just wrote one generation was written on. And it took us several years to overcome. It's different than the Cleveland. They never lost a generation. Abigail Silver was vehement. And if there were people who were modestly warm to Israel, if there were such people, by the time Abigail got through with them, they were there contributing whether or not they had some qualms about it. And just as a quick aside, I mentioned the Ratners in Cleveland, the guy with the heavy accent, a wonderful guy. And he always used to say, when people, when we ran across people who wanted to give more money to the hospital and less money to overseas, and he was a vehement overseas, he would always say, look, and we would say, ah, the hell with it, he only wants to give us so much money, and we won't take it. To say, look, these people don't want us, they don't need us, let's take whatever we can. It was wonderful that way. Let's take whatever we can get, and so forth. So,
you know, an interesting thing is several of these people who had gone through the Shulman very reformed, their children became very
Orthodox. Well, there was a backlash in the sense that people getting to understand they wanted more from the religion. But today it's a, I'm a member of Rhoda Shulman, but today it's a totally different. But those were difficult years in the leadership. I must say that eventually we've gotten a lot of leaders from Rhoda Shulman as years went on and became more respectable to give money to Israel. But talking about some of those people, we had in town a Leon Falk. I'll give a few juicy things.
What year?
Well, this was around the same time I'm talking about. I got there 65, let's say 68. And there was Leon Falk and a brilliant attorney by the name of Kaplan. Brilliant attorney. And he was the attorney for Leon Falk.
The tall guy?
No. More in the short side.
Is it K-A-P or
C? C, not K. K is the other Beck Kaplan.
No, not
Beck. Wonderful guy.
Wonderful. But he was pro-Israel.
Yeah. Wonderful. Pro-Israel, pro-education. So this, and when I got here, one of the problems that was developing is that those in favor of Jewish education, particularly all-day schools, were pushing and pushing at the Federation to give them an allocation. Those years, there were no such allocations. There was some negative feeling. Now, both of the individuals I'm talking about, Kaplan and Falk, Falk was, again, one of the old German Jews in this town. And his giving was, $30,000 a month, but it was, and he had a lot of influence. And he had inherited a lot of money, I think, his uncle, Maurice Falk.
Which one gave the... to the girls' college, Chatham, the Falk Chapel there.
That was probably Maurice. And we would always say, well, we're not more if the community was ready to do that, or we had a lot of opposition from leadership. So one day I had an appointment with Leon Falk and this Kaplan about something else. I had just got to town.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, look, you're new here, and we want you to know something. This Kaplan was saying, we don't believe in education, an all-day school education. Now, we were giving money still to the Hebrew Institute. So we don't believe in it. But we want you to know that we won't accept. That was a wonderful and it was terrific. It came just at the right time. Because as soon as their objection melted, and they were active board people. They would get up at the board meetings and talk. And they would talk against it, but they would always say, we're not going to stand in the way. And by that time, Herman Feinberg and other people were getting more and more active. And then, of course, we became strong supporters of the all-day school movement. So that was an interesting piece of...
Very good. who pushed it most, Feinberg?
Well, he was one of those. Oh, yes, Herman. Strong. Feinberg, Beck, Kaplan. Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about the side, about people having to give a lot of money to be leaders and so forth and so on. But then you take a guy like Beck Kaplan, who was so well, he may have given $800 or $1,000.
That's right.
He was so well regarded in this town that he became a force.
Mm-hmm.
People respected him because of what he did for the community. He didn't pick up his marbles and go home. He would always come back and fight another day. Wonderful, just the greatest guy. As a matter of fact, his wife is still around.
Yes, she's lovely.
Trying to run into her.
Rose is still around.
Lovely
and
lady.
And still active.
Huh? Yes,
still
lovely active. Lady. So that was, okay. Now, if you're talking about, you remember the days of King, the Black,
yes, Martin Luther.
Martin Luther King. And we had our share of burning here on the hill. Before that happened, during that period, a group of blacks asked to see us. And so I'll never forget this meeting with Saul Shapira, who was the former president, now dead, of Giant Eagle. Brilliant man. The presidents we had at the Federation, I never saw such a group of devoted, bright people, each in their own way. Saul Shapira, Alvin Rogow, myself, and about four of these blacks.
Was Shapiro and
Alvin Rogow.
And Alvin and
myself. We met with these blacks, and what they wanted blackmail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They wanted $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
They would tell us where the guns are, and so forth and so on. We sat there and listened, you know. And, you know, in retrospect, I'm thinking, like, why didn't we, you know, I don't know, call the police, do something? We, you know, we listened to them. And, you know, we were concerned about the Jewish merchants on the hill. And they would protect them and so forth. Well, we didn't.
How much did they ask for?
$250,000.
Yeah.
Which in that time, a lot of money. We wouldn't even hear about it, okay? And eventually, most of these people ended up in jail because we still had the riots. Most of these people ended up in jail. But that was another little bit of interesting thing. And it wasn't much
fun. Were real bald-headed black among them, do you remember? Tall, strong, bald-headed.
There was one guy.
Nat.
Yeah, Nat. Yeah, that's what I'm...
There was some guy who went to jail.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I was scared to death. I was scared to death. He's a big, brawny guy. And, those were tricky days. And when I remember, we finally had a mass meeting because everybody, it was really after the fires on the hill and so forth. And, you know, ours were modest compared to other places, but we still had 40 or 50 merchants who were burned out one way or another. And Saul Shapiro, who was a brilliant speaker, made a speech to this mass meeting pointing out the problems and also pointing out the problems of blacks. and he did really a fantastic job to ease the fears of the Jewish community, because these are things federations do in addition to raising money. In a sense, we're there when there's something, a problem common to the Jewish community. The Jewish community looks to us to do something. So that was an interesting period.
What year was that?
Around the Martin Luther King incident, I don't really know.
About 68.
Was it 68? Early?
I could be wrong.
I don't really know.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't 75. You're probably better.
Yeah, because...
We had our share of hostile people who, for one reason or another, felt that the Federation wasn't going the way they wanted it to go. And they were noisy, and they would write letters to the Federation president, and one fellow didn't get to be at the head of a parade, and he wrote a hostile letter and about me, because I always said I made the decision, and so forth and so on. And our leadership, bless them, in these instances, they would listen, they'd give the guy a hearing, and then they would decide that these people were better off outside the framework of the Federation, the structure of the Federation. They shouldn't be on committees, they shouldn't be on the board, because they could not work with other people. And therefore, let them scream, let them be outside, they'll do less damage to us outside than inside.
Mm.
Now, you know, sometimes you will say, you know, we'll take a guy in and we'll smooth his feathers, and they were right. They were right, the few people that there were, and they, maybe half a dozen, and maybe this half a dozen represented a few hundred people, never got to get to a position of prominence. You mentioned Harold David, he was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what they screamed or what they said, they'll listen to and give them a day in court, but then everybody would say, you know, the Bishagas, these guys want to run the Federation, and they want our money to boot, and then they'll want to do what they want to do. We're not going to do it. So, and there's one incident that I have to tell you about. This one I won't mention the name.
You should.
No, I could. This particular one. Because the guy is eventually a sick person. You know, you have a federation, and then you have jobs, leadership, you know, chairman of the budget committee, you're on the board, and then you have a campaign, and you have a campaign structure, okay? Now, this campaign structure, there'd be a chairman of the campaign would be appointed by the president, generally, with the advice and consent of the board, but generally appointed by the president. And then this chairman, with my assistance, and I was always, and obviously I would be involved in the appointment of the chairman, because I would have to work with him, you'd have a whole hierarchy, special gifts, trade divisions, so forth. So we ran into somebody, that rough, tough guy, a Jewish person, I'll say this much, he's in the food business. I don't know if you know him.
Without a name, I won't know him.
Okay.
And without a name, you're not doing me any good.
Well, it won't. No, because this is just an idea.
Well,
yeah,
go ahead.
I can't give you the name. Because they have family here, it just wouldn't be right. You'll know when after I tell you the story. And there was one guy, and he got to be chairman of the food division, and he did a pretty good job, and so forth. And then we... Sometimes after a guy's been chairman of the food division of a division, and then we see that he's not going to make much progress towards running the whole campaign, we give him another job somewhere and so forth. This guy decided that I was keeping him from becoming chairman of the campaign. And he made my life. He called me up on the telephone at midnight. Said, "You're doing it to me. I just came from my psychiatrist." He's a well-known person.
Hmm. Never know. Hmm.
And I would keep saying to him, "Look, it's not my decision. The chairman of the president of the federation makes those decisions." "No, no, 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 no. You're the one. You're the one. You're the one." This went on for about a month. And so and then I learned that he was members of a certain club, and he'd go to somebody's house where the president would be there. And I would tell the president, "Why don't you say something to him?" "No." When the guy complained about me, the president didn't say boo. So he was reinforced, you see, that I would, not that they wanted him. They would never appoint him in a million years, but they wanted me
to take the load.
To take the rap.
Yeah.
And, that was our poor Eleanor. At one point in time, I said, "Gee, I can't, we can't take this," because he was in my office all the time. And this went on for a very long time, and eventually he stopped contributing.
Hmm.
And the leadership knew that he said why, but they never said anything, said to me, let him be chairman. That much they weren't going to let him do. That's the kind of thing that happened. Most cases, there are many other people to whom this happens, who think they should be promoted in the hierarchy, but they don't go to this. They don't go to this extent. That was really one of the toughest things I had.
Mm-hmm.
But we worked it out, mostly on the leadership in the last analysis. Good care of me. Pretty much. Now, some of the things we did were, I wrote a book about fundraising.
What year? What's the name of it?
Fundraising for Philanthropy. It was really the first book there must be a data in the inside cover. And I did some teaching in the university.
Published by
the Chronicle.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote that book. The synopsis of that book on my way back from Israel on a rough sheet of paper. It was a long 10-hour trip. So I don't know, I got it into my head and I wrote it.
Good for you.
Fairly well received.
Good for you.
The other thing that probably a mark of my regime here was leadership development. Something I brought with me from Cleveland. And the concept was that we got somebody in town to give us a few $1,000 for endowment. And then every year, sometimes every other year, we created a committee of top people, and we would sit down and go over a list and pick 12 to 14 people. In those days, men, 12 to 14 people, whom we felt had the potential for leadership in this Jewish community. And people ranging from doctors, attorneys, nameless breed. And we would sit with these people over a year period, once a month, once every 2 weeks. We'd have a session on what Jewish family service, what Israel about. The age range of these people was interesting, was 35 to 45. Because we found that's the generation that we were missing when I came to Pittsburgh. And they knew very little about Federation. Now, after the year, and then we would take them to Israel on a trip. And the money that we used, we would go to buy them a drink once in a while, or we would have meals, and we'd meet at the offices of the Home for Aged, or the Officers Community Center. And we, in this fashion, we developed 40 or 50 guys that became wedded to us. We gave them highly individual attention. And after a while, people would want to be...